From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me, welcome. Beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move all through the summer and into all these wonderful events happening this summer and into the fall where the Catholic Ministry Days will be September 28th and 29th. We'll talk about some of the great workshops a little bit later in the program. Well, there is a Understanding Grief workshop coming up on beginning on Saturday tomorrow and continuing through the summer. And we're pleased to welcome in Susan Wright. Susan, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. How you doing?
Doing very well. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful day the Lord's made.
Amen.
Yes. Tell us about the Understanding Grief workshop.
Well, Bob, it's a comprehensive program that offers the participants insight into the grief process, and we hope to provide them with some tools to help them cope with their loss as well. And that work, this workshop will run for 8 consecutive Saturdays. It does start tomorrow, and usually we like to have people registered beforehand, but we're just inviting those in the Sacramento area that if you believe it's something that will help you, just come. We'll make room for you.
Oh, very good. And this will all be at Divine Mercy?
Yes, Divine Mercy Parish in Natomas. And our address is 2231 Club Center Drive. And, and we're in the church.
Now, the there's 8 straight Saturdays. Some people, being summer, aren't going to be able to make all of them. Can they make some and not others, or how does that work?
Well, you know, Bob, we feel the program kind of builds on each other each week. And so we try to encourage people to at least attend the first 2 or 3.
Uh-huh.
And after that, if there's a vacation or you need to, leave for some reason, we can understand that. But you kind of need those first 2 or 3 to feel like you've got that framework, and then we have additional materials that they can take with them. But it is a very structured program. It's a successful program. Some of our other parishes offer it as well, and it's been very helpful to people.
Susan, are you the facilitator?
I am, Bob.
Tell us about yourself and your background in this, how you got into this ministry.
Well, I've been involved with this since the year 2000, and when I say that, I sound really old, so. but there just was not a whole lot of people offering this type of workshop or educational opportunities in our parishes. And a great lady, Barbara Lordi, came into the diocese, offered the training, which I attended, and then we started going with this 8-week program. It's offered about maybe once a year, maybe sometimes every other year, and with the specific intent of helping people that have had a loss. And one thing that's kind of interesting is that we've really seen a trend, Bob, in younger people coming to these workshops now. There was a time when, as you would expect, it might be spouses who had lost, their husband or wife, that type of thing, maybe older folks. But now we're seeing more younger people coming. They might have lost friends or coworkers or siblings. And I think that that's a reflection of society as a whole. They're making people, they're helping people understand that grief, it just doesn't hit you when you're old. You can experience grief throughout your lifetime. And so we are seeing younger people coming, and we hope to be able to help everyone who comes.
Is when you say grief, are we talking mostly loss of life?
I would say, Bob, that's 90% of it. We do have some people, it's also open to people who are caregivers, because we've seen that they suffer on a daily basis with the people that they're helping. And we have had a few people who have gone through a divorce and are suffering the grief following a divorce. But I would say 90% of the people who attend have lost a significant person in their life, whether that's husband, wife, parents, and tragically, sometimes even a child.
Mm-hmm. So how, from a Catholic standpoint, how do you learn about to administer a ministry like this. It seems like there's a lot of really delicate stuff there.
Well, you're right about that. And I, much as I hate to say it, some of the damage that's done is done by people who mean well, but they just kind of say the wrong thing,
sure.
You know. And the best thing that we can do, really, is to be there for people. When we, my husband and I, got into facilitating this ministry, we read everything there was. We attended other workshops and training, and you kind of, the more you go through it, Bob, and you get to talk with people who have lost people, there's a common bond amongst all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a scar that won't heal, but they need to talk about it. They need to understand, to be given some tools to understand what they're going through. And, you know, I've always been a believer that the more you know about a problem, the more you can do about it. So the Understanding Grief Workshop, it's designed to do just that, to help people understand what they're going through. We cannot take that hurt away, but we can give them a tool that will help them go forward maybe the next day, and maybe eventually things will get better, and that's what we pray for.
You know, I know well what you're saying about saying the wrong thing. I think many people don't say anything, almost avoid it for fear of saying the wrong thing or saying something trite or meaningless, and or even offering to help in some way. I can still remember when my dad died, and been married to my mom for 47 years and 5 kids, and it was a long decline and an quote unquote expected death, but you never expect it till it actually happens. And I remember one of the neighbors, just so well-meaning, came over and gave my mom a big hug and said, "Well, it's really better for everyone," because he had, you know, he was a quote unquote burden on the family because he was bedridden and et cetera, you know. And it was just to see the look on my mom's face, she couldn't hide it, you know, like, she didn't think she was better off, you know, but it was a well-meaning person saying completely the wrong thing.
Yes. Fortunately, that happens a lot, and people mean well. You know, with children, one thing that we hear a lot, someone will say to a person who's lost a child, well, there's another angel in heaven.
Right.
And that they mean well. You know,
sure.
They really do mean well, but it's really best to, you know, to be there and say, you know, I if you ever want to talk about, you know, your husband or your child, I'd love to listen. You know, tell me about it. Let's have a cup of coffee. That person is very alone right now, and they mm-hmm. really don't have anyone to talk to. So you have to kind of sometimes hold those opinions in and just listen.
Just listen. Yeah. So the workshop begins this Saturday, July 7, runs for 8 consecutive weeks through the 25th. Of August, and it will all be at Divine Mercy Catholic Church, 2231 Club Center Drive. And Susan, do you want to give a phone number or a website so people could sign up?
Please, and just a reminder, it runs from 10 in the morning until approximately 1 in the afternoon, so the morning class. And if they'd like to call our parish office, well, actually, when they hear this, well, our parish office is 916-256-3134, or they can call me at 916-419-4321. But if the workshop sounds like something that will help you, just come.
Very good. Susan, thanks so much for doing this, and thanks for taking the time to be with us this morning.
Thanks, Bob. We appreciate you and your voice throughout the diocese.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, God bless your ministry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. That's Susan Wright at Divine Mercy Parish, and we're pleased to welcome in Steve Patton. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Steve, it's July. You're supposed to be putting your feet up and going on vacation, and I've never seen a month so full specifically for you.
It is a pretty full month, Bob. Yeah. So this is July is the marks the 50th anniversary of the landmark document Humanae Vitae, which was issued by Pope Paul VI in 1968. And we are going to be recognizing that in a couple different ways in our diocese. One will be actually not in July; it'll be in August. We have an annual gathering of Respect Life leaders from around the diocese, and by leaders, I mean basically anybody who self-identifies as pro-life and is willing to, you know, to say that publicly. That makes you a leader. And we have a meeting once a year for anyone who's, you know, involved in some kind of pro-life work, and including just praying. You know, it's always the Saturday before Labor Day, and this year that's August the 25th. And it'll be this year at St. John the Baptist Parish in Folsom. And that event this year, it's always for Respect Life, you know, leaders, and Respect Life topics. But this particular year, we're going to be making the connection between the contraceptive revolution, which was, you know, what Humanae Vitae really responded to in 1968, the connection between the contraceptive revolution / sexual revolution and the abortion revolution. That, you know, we are fighting, and rightly so, the, you know, just the, this awful holocaust of the taking of unborn lives. But I think what many people don't realize is just how the contraceptive mentality and contraceptive practice feeds that that abortion mentality.
Once you start with an anti-child mentality, it's a pretty quick step in from the pill into abortion.
Yeah, and that's so true. And I think that people they don't realize that you know, at the beginning of the contraceptive revolution, we're talking about the early '60s with the advent of the pill. That all of a sudden it became, you know, very, very easy and very, very effective to, you know, eliminate the life-giving potential of the sexual embrace. And the promise, quote-unquote, of you know, the pill was that it was going to – well, two different promises. Number one, it was going to make marriage easier. It was going to reduce the stresses on a marriage, you know, the fear of getting pregnant. It's and secondly, that it would actually lower the temptation to abort because there would be fewer pregnancies, you know.
Sure.
And so, but as it turned out, and we can see this clearly now with 50 years of retrospection, that the exact opposite happened. You know, the divorce rate skyrocketed in the years, you know, since the sexual revolution, and also the, you know, the abortion rates skyrocketed too. So, you know, the abortion revolution, the divorce revolution, these are all at their root, you know, part of the contraceptive revolution. So that's what we'll be bringing home in this Respect Life gathering, August the 25th at St. John the Baptist Parish. Now, if you'd like more information and to sign up for it, I welcome you to go look at our webpage for it. It is, you know, off the diocese's homepage, which is scd.org for Sacramento Catholic Diocese.org, then /, Respect Life Gathering. So scd.org/ Respect Life Gathering. So we will have, this is a program that, the program itself, Bob, runs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., but it will be, it'll the day will begin with Mass, 8:30 Mass that Bishop Soto will celebrate in the parish sanctuary. And then we'll kind of drift over to the brand new, beautiful parish social hall after that, and, you know, for the program to begin at 10. And we'll spend about an hour and a half of that, of the morning. We'll be watching a new film that's just coming out called Unprotected, which is a documentary on the untold story of the sexual revolution. And, you know, there's a link to the trailer for that movie. If you go to that website, I just mentioned scd.org/ Respect Life Gathering. And it's just, you know, remarkable what has happened in these last 50 years that, you know, if you weren't aware of it, you wouldn't know it, that is what's really happened. It's sort of like the, you know, the old story about the frog, you know, toss a frog into a boiling pot of water, it'll hop right out, but, you know, put a frog in a cold pot of water and it slowly boils and the frog dies. You know, we don't realize what has really happened these last 50 years. You know, the dissolution of the family, mm-hmm. loss of respect for life, the redefinition, the loss of marriage, then the redefinition of marriage. All this has its roots in this new way of looking at what sex is.
You know, the whole notion of married sex, if you will, between a man and a woman, and a child as a result of it, a child, you just think of it as a gift from God, and when you abort that child, it's like you're saying, this sexual act over here was meaningless in terms of love. Mm-hmm. You know, the sort of the product of this sexual act was this, and that was a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It was almost an evil thing. We need to get rid of it.
Right.
It so diminishes the sexual act that, I guess there's no other way to say it, that love between a man and a woman, that it really takes the love out of it. And mm-hmm. and it's no wonder that divorce would skyrocket. When you really look at it rationally, it's like they go hand in hand. And the same thing as once you, whether it's the pill or the condom or diaphragm or what it is, the notion that abortions, a child is something that gets in the way. It's mm-hmm. it's something unnecessary. It's something hurtful, harmful. And we did the responsible thing. We practiced safe sex. We mm-hmm. took the pill or whatever, and it failed us.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next step?
Right.
Not that everybody does that, but the next step is, well, we'd already decided we didn't want to have a child, so here's mm-hmm. option one failed. Here's option two. It's called abortion.
Right.
And, you know, when you look at Humanae Vitae, it almost dovetails exactly to the year that California legalized abortion.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to not, you're an attorney, you understand that Roe v. Wade didn't legalize abortion. It legalized it in all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
But it was already legal in California
mm-hmm.
and New York and several other places. And,
yeah.
and if Roe v. Wade, and a lot of talk about that right now, is repealed, it doesn't ban abortion in all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
It just turns it back over to the states.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, you make an important point there about the, you know, when you contracept the sexual act. And basically contraception, whether you speak of contraception or sterilization, it's basically the same thing. Contraception is temporary sterilization. Sterilization is permanent contraception.
Sure.
So it's rendering the sexual act, lifeless.
The intent and the effect are the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know what the thinking is. I mean, the motivation behind either act, you know, sterilization or contraception, is that, you know, we want to enjoy the love-giving meaning, but we don't want to be bothered with the life-giving meaning or mm-hmm. potential. And but as St. John Paul II pointed out, it really doesn't work that way because those two meanings are wrapped around one another.
Sure they are.
Such that if you do something detrimental to one meaning, you end up doing detriment to the second as well. So that purposefully removing that life-giving meaning from sex, it erodes and ultimately destroys the love-giving meaning too. So you have, you know, the married couple who, you know, I mean, even perhaps with good intention, unwittingly, they're turning the sexual act from, you know, an exchange of, you know, an expression of their conjugal union. It no longer is that.
Right.
It's just they're enjoying a sexual act together, but it's not one that is expressing mm-hmm. their marital union.
Right.
So it becomes, you know, less meaningful. In fact, ultimately, it becomes, you know, meaningless. So that, we have this growing phenomenon in our world of actually sexless marriages, or marriages that, you know,
right.
Because sex has lost that meaning, it becomes eventually a little bit, you know, less attractive to the couples, and which is so ironic because the entire goal was, you know, we want to have
sex all the time,
whenever we want,
right.
however we want,
right.
But when it loses that spark, of, you know, life-giving potential, then it becomes less interesting. And then you see the rise of alternatives, you know, adultery, sure. pornography,
sure.
You know, masturbation, people just, you know, turning inward and away from their spouses. And, you know, it's not the way God designed. God wants us to be happy in our marriages, Bob. God wants us to be fulfilled. And, you know, it requires discipline to live according to his plan. But ultimately, it's more fulfilling to live in harmony with our sexual nature as God made it than it is to, you know, live contrary to it. And thanks be to God, there is an alternative. We do not have to. God doesn't want necessarily us to have 15 kids in every marriage. You know, you can, we can regulate our fertility by natural means rather than purposefully disrupting it with contraception or sterilization. So I urge everyone to find out about natural family planning. We're blessed in our diocese with a great number of natural family planning mm-hmm. teachers. You can find out a lot more about what's going on in our diocese with natural family planning simply by going to, again, the diocesan webpage, scd.org/NFP. So that will give you all the information, including contact information for local NFP teachers. We're blessed to have a lot of them all over the diocese, Spanish and English, to find out more about this, you know, natural, green, less expensive alternative to, you know, contraception and sterilization.
And we will... at the end of the month, which is National Family Planning Week, at the end of July, we will have some guests on to mm-hmm. explain the various aspects of that.
Right. I wanted to also mention, since we were talking about the 50th anniversary of Humana Vitae, there is a conference in Southern California in Ontario. Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, this is not Ontario, Canada. This is Ontario, which is part of...
It's a little bit closer.
Part of Metro Los Angeles, but
right.
a conference... July 20, for most people, it's July 27th and 28th. It is preceded by a couple of pre-conference events, one for clergy and one for healthcare mm-hmm. professionals. But for the general public, January 27th and 28th, about just a celebration of Humana Vitae. And I'll be one of the workshop leaders there talking about integrating NFP into marriage preparation. You can find out more information and register for that conference at www.celebratehv50.com. So celebratehv50.com. It'll includes a list of all the speakers. It's quite a lineup of you know, all the big hitters in the world of natural family planning. Christopher West, George Weigel, Dr. Janet Smith, Patrick Coffin, Archbishop Corleone. So it's just kind of list goes on and on.
We were able to talk to Dr. Smith the other day, and mm-hmm. yeah, just she's really on top of the subject.
Yeah, so
learn a lot.
So anyway, this is one of these great, unfortunately, largely unknown, untapped treasures of the church, and I just urge everyone to find out more about it. Again, for this August 25th gathering that I'll be hosting at St. John the Baptist Parish. More information about that at scd.org/respectlifegathering, all one word, respect life gathering. I'll be giving the afternoon keynote talk entitled Hope for Our Dying World, Humana Vitae at 50. And I mean, basically, we're seeing our world more and more spiraling toward an acceptance and a promotion of a death mentality. And, you know, not just in the form of abortion, but death to love in the form of collapse of marriage. You know, we're seeing this more threats to the end of life, you know, assisted suicide, euthanasia. All of this stuff is connected to this mistreatment of the human body.
Humana Vitae, you can get it on the Vatican website. You can just Google Humana Vitae and you're going to find it in a million places. But I know there are people listening saying, I've heard of Humana Vitae so often and I don't really know enough about it. I'm embarrassed to talk. Like, I don't want to bring it up because I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
What are the two or three salient points of Humana Vitae? If you had to boil it down to 25 words or less, what would you say about Humana Vitae?
Well, Humana Vitae, I mean, fortunately, it is as documents go, our encyclicals go, it's relatively short. You know, a lot of contemporary or modern day encyclicals are a long read. This one, it'll take you about 15 to 20 minutes to get done with it, but it boils down to any action taken to render the marital act non-procreative, either before the act, during the act, or after the act, right, is not morally permissible. And that's the basic bottom line, is that, you know, we are to keep, you know, the sexual act always open to life. However, the Pope said that he did encourage a developing understanding of, you know, the fertility cycle, so that we can live in harmony with it. And and that's why, thanks be to God, we have modern day methods of natural family planning. It's not the quote unquote rhythm method, which a lot of people thought, or some continue to think, that's what NFP is really all about. So anyway, it's good news for the modern world. Please, you know, read the document. It's easily found. Humanae, HumanaeVitae. And you can get it on the website. Latin for human life.
Human life, indeed. Steve, thanks so much, and thanks for being very busy this July, because it means a lot to a lot of us.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
Thank you.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue, open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff, and we now welcome in Kevin Staskow, the director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry. First time I've said that, because it just happened.
Yes, we just the Department of Evangelization and Catechesis is no more. The bishop still likes evangelization and catechesis, but he's split our department into two. There's the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry, which I'm directing, and then we welcomed Chris Owens yesterday. Mm-hmm. He's our new director of the Office of Family and Faith Formation.
Very good.
So we have just made that split, and we're trying to negotiate all of that, kind of, you know, split up all the different programs and responsibilities.
Kevin, as of last Saturday, it's now Deacon Kevin Staskow.
That is correct. I was ordained over the weekend. It was very joyful.
You are ordained as a deacon.
That's right. Yep. As my daughter said, Dad, you've received all seven sacraments. That is so cool. I was very proud that my daughter knew that.
Wow.
So, So it's, very, very joy-filled weekend. We had 27 of us in our class that all were ordained.
Is that an especially large class?
Yeah, that's, I think, the largest they've ever had. Yeah. I mean, the last class they thought was large, and that was like 17 or 18. So we're I'm pretty sure it's the largest ordination we've ever had in the diocese, of 27 being ordained at the same time.
Did it take all day?
No, they did it 2.5, 3 hours. I mean, it was under 3 hours. They were worried about it being 3.5, but it was, you know, Bishop kept it moving. He didn't talk too long. Good job with that. But it was just very beautiful. I mean, it's a little bit overwhelming. I such a long process to go through.
5 years.
Yeah, it's about a 5-year process. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes about a year to apply. Mm-hmm. We had a 4.5 year. Our formation was 4.5 years. The new class that's coming in starting in September, their formation will be 4 years.
Uh-huh.
So there'll be another ordination in 2022. But it's been a long journey, and it all culminates in that. The blessing is that we're canonically required before ordination to have a 5-day retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I got to go away on retreat for the six days, five nights before the ordination. And that was a really good experience. I would highly recommend that anybody who's going to be making a transition in their life or their ministry or whatever to take a retreat for 5 days. Because, I mean, I've taken a vacation, like, before we moved to Sacramento, we took a vacation. But then you go on vacation, and you're like, oh, we got to get all this. We got to do all this stuff. The nice thing about the retreat was just some quiet time to relax and be refreshed and be centered with Christ in the correct way. And we were really, I think, ready to, really take in and really receive and receive the sacrament and the grace of the sacrament.
That's right. Yeah, it's good that you could do it. I did see the ad in the paper saying babysitter needed for twin girls for 6 days.
Yeah, my sister came up from the Bay Area. She took a vacation from her family and took care of my daughters for a week.
I have a sister like that. She's the relief pitcher. We pull her in from the bullpen when we really need to get away.
She had a good week. She has two. She has a senior in high school and a college student who are back home for the summer, and so she was just she said, oh, it'll be good for me to get away from them for a week. And my daughters were in a camp program at St. Francis at the Camp Truby they have every summer. So my daughters were at Camp Truby all day, so she got during the day she was the carpool, picked them up, dropped them off. She just took care of them in the evening. So she had a good time, good week.
Very good. Well, so you don't have with the diaconate training, you don't have a freshman, sophomore, junior, senior class. They take one group and take them all the way through before they start another.
Traditionally, it's been every 2 years.
Uh-huh.
So we had the class before us was supposed to be 2016. Uli Schmidt took over as the director, and he decided to extend that class another year. So they had to go another year. So they were ordained in 2017. We were in 2018. This next class will be 2022 because they didn't bring another class in. But they may bring another class in 2020. Every 2 years has been the pattern. I think that they are trying to decide whether it's better to go every four, every two. The new class... the interesting thing about the new class is they've always done a Spanish class, which has been formed in Spanish, and then every other time. So like the 2017 class that was supposed to be 2016, that was a class of Spanish deacons who speak Spanish. And then they had the English class.
Mm-hmm.
They're going completely bilingual now. So the idea is that everybody goes through together.
Uh-huh.
Most of the formation is in English. Everybody who is ordained will have to be able to serve as a deacon at a Spanish mass. So they need to be able to, I don't know if they need to speak, they need to have a basic level of Spanish, be able to write a homily and then have that translated and be able to proclaim that homily in Spanish.
Did you undergo Spanish language training as well?
We didn't have to do that. Oh. That wasn't our class, didn't have to do it. But the new class, they had to either...
already have
show a proficiency in Spanish or take a Spanish class for like a it was like a 8 or 9 month class they've already taken before going in, and then they'll do some other things to make sure their Spanish is better. Bishop Soto has said that you know that it's become with clergy, so many of the parishes have need of Spanish language that you know the priests and the deacons pretty much have to have some knowledge of both languages to be able to get by. So I've been assigned to St. Lawrence in North Highlands, and they have 3 masses in Spanish and me 3 masses in English. So I'll be learning really fast, you know, how to say all the deacon stuff. And the deacon doesn't have very many lines in the mass.
So right.
It isn't a lot of Spanish you need to know, but I'll also have to, proclaim the homily once in a while.
So how much of your duties as a deacon are at the mass itself, and how many are outside of that?
No, I think that, the deacon is supposed to serve in the ministry of the word, the ministry of the altar, and the ministry of charity. And the deacon is the sacramental sign of service for the church. So the idea is that the deacon should be known for their service ministry to prisons, to hospitals, to the poor, to the marginalized. Right. Because when they serve at the table, they're given a place at the table of the Lord, at the altar, because of that service.
Right.
So they're, in a sense, bringing the poor, the marginalized, those who are sick, to the altar and reminding the community that, hey, these people are part of our community as well, and we need to make sure that we know that. And likewise, when the deacon proclaims the gospel and gives the homily, he does so because during the week he's with those marginalized people, and he's bringing the experience of those marginalized and the encouragement and the encouragement and challenge to the community that, hey, you should be out there serving. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not enough to just come to Mass and receive the sacraments.
Right.
We need to put that into action in the world. So the deacon is always supposed to be the sign of Christ the servant. At the Last Supper, Jesus washed his disciples' feet and said, the greatest among you will be the servants.
Right.
And when the apostles were busy proclaiming the gospel and presiding at the liturgies and stuff of the early church, they found that they didn't have time to serve properly the people that needed to be served. And so the first deacons came out of that need of, we need to make sure that, in our apostolic work, that the poor and the marginalized, the widows, the orphans, they're not ignored. And so they, ordained deacons
What was your first act as a deacon?
My first act as a deacon?
Yeah.
I got to sit with the deacons. No, you, right after you were ordained, if you can see it on video, it's very, I thought it was very powerful. It was at least powerful to me personally. As soon as you're ordained a deacon, you get vested in the dalmatic and the stole and the dalmatic. And then all of the deacons, the bishop comes and gives you a hug, welcome to the order, right? Gives you the sign of peace. And then every deacon in the whole diocese then does the same thing. So there are 27 of us are standing there, and there's this huge hug line, And through my job here at the diocese, I've gotten to know.
27 times 26 times.
I think that was like 50. Yeah, it was a lot of hugging.
It's a lot of hugs.
Well, they're doing some of them simultaneously, right? So it's okay. But anyway, so they come, and there's a big, a welcome to the order, to the brotherhood, or whatever. It was very powerful, I thought, that piece was whatever. But I did get to celebrate my first Mass, or celebrate at my first Mass on Sunday. Mm-hmm. We had 3 candidates from St. Clair and Roseville, and we all served at the 11:30 Mass. And I was
at St. Clair?
At St. Clair, and I was able to proclaim the gospel and give the homily.
Oh, wonderful.
So that was great. And my whole family was there, all my brothers and sisters came.
Oh, wow.
It was great. We had a big,
a beautiful church
celebration. Oh yeah, no, it's a blessing to be able to to be in that church. Just so it is really beautiful
and huge too. I've the times I've been there, I've said they needed a golf cart to bring people in from the far reaches of the parking lot.
A lot of people. That was what we built last year. The parish had to build a new parking lot. Christmas and Easter, people were getting towed by parking in the streets.
We had to
build a bigger parking lot.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
In terms of the training itself, what what sort of things are you learning? I mean, you're already pretty well steeped in the faith before you go into it.
Yeah, well, I think for myself, I went in with a master's degree in pastoral ministry already and about 20 years experience in ministry.
Right.
So I'm not necessarily the typical candidate, but the program focuses on the four main areas of formation that all ministers would be formed in. The spiritual dimension, the pastoral dimension, or the practical dimension of doing ministry, the intellectual dimension, kind of understanding the faith, and then also the human dimension. So the idea is that if you're not formed well in all four of those areas, you can't really be a good minister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't, if you're not a good person, if you're not able to make friends, if you're not able to be hospitable to people, if you're not, you know, a joy-filled, well-formed person, regardless of the faith, you can't be a good deacon. There's no way. I mean, you can't. I mean, you're not going to be able to go into visit the sick and be present to them.
You don't want a grumpy deacon.
You don't want to be. Yeah, you need to. You need to be compassionate, and you need to be, empathetic. You need all those things. So that idea of the human formation is one concern. The spiritual dimension is really important because you want the deacon to be able to be a man of prayer, somebody who is. Receiving the sacraments a lot, is really, really practicing, has a strong spiritual dimension to themselves. So a lot of time was spent on making sure that we had a routine of prayer, doing morning and evening prayer, doing Lexia Divina on the scriptures daily, making sure that we did an examination of conscience before we went to sleep, just, and then using Ignatian spirituality, actually, to try to really... ground our spiritual practice in this idea of, finding God in all things and, just being really aware of that spiritual dimension. And then intellectual formation is always obviously really important because the deacon is supposed to be a minister of the word.
Right.
So as a minister of the word, understanding the scriptures, understanding the teachings of the church, being able to explain those to people because we entrust the deacon the responsibility of giving a homily.
Right.
At the Mass, so being able to interpret the scripture in the daily lives of the people requires a good knowledge of obviously the Bible, but also, church history, theology, philosophy, et cetera. So we took a number of classes, I don't know how many classes, probably 30 online classes in the 4 years through the Notre Dame STEP program, and then we did 6 formation weekends a year. So we had to go away for a whole weekend with our wives 6 times a year to be formed intellectually in that way. And then the pastoral ministry comes through doing ministry. So every year we had a pastoral ministry assignment. So throughout the 4 years we had to serve as a Eucharistic minister and as a lector, and we had to serve the poor, do some project that where we were on a regular basis serving the poor. I served at Friendship Park for Loaves and Fishes 3 or 4 mornings a week, or 3 or 4 mornings a month. And then each year we had an assignment. So 1 year we did hospital ministry, visiting the sick, bringing them communion, providing prayer and care for the families. 1 year we did multicultural ministry. Mm-hmm. So we worked in a culture outside of our own. 1 year we did ecumenical ministry. We also did a part of our project during our multicultural year was to make a visit to our elected representatives to advocate for different issues that the bishops were interested in being advocated for.
I bet that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, actually, I lucked out. I got some guys who are pretty supportive.
Who actually agreed with you?
Agreed with the didn't actively disagree. So that was good.
There are some states that will be easier to do that than other states.
Yeah. That's for sure. And so we did that. And so there's a lot of different aspects to it. It's a long road. It's 5 years of your life. So it's a lot. And along that time, we were all in our 40s, 50s, and 60s. So there's, you know, a lot of life happens during that 5 years too.
Sure.
A lot of us lost parents. We lost one of the wives, and we lost one of the candidates. Right. Dan Devereaux passed away in June, and so
just before,
that was difficult. Just before, yeah.
So everybody, a lot of people ask, okay, so what can a deacon do, and what can a deacon not do? They know you can't hear confession.
No, we can't. We can't. Celebrate Mass and confect the Eucharist.
Right.
I always thought it was weird that they say confect, but that's
confect,
that is the
really,
correct word.
That's the word.
Yes. So
like
you
confection,
can't,
like confect,
yeah, like create,
C-O-N-F-E-C-T. Yeah.
So so we can't forgive sins. We can't do that. So we can deacons can preside at and witness weddings outside of Mass.
Mass. That don't involve Mass, right?
And funerals as well.
Right.
We do funeral vigils and graveside services.
I've gone to a number of rosaries after someone has died, generally the night before, and presided over by a deacon.
Yeah, and actually the service that the church provides or the proper service is the vigil. Sometimes a rosary can also be offered, but it's important that people know that
the vigil,
the service is actually the vigil. Sometimes they'll do a decade of the rosary as part of that. Sometimes they'll do a rosary as a separate idea, but the actual rite or ritual of the church is the funeral vigil. So
is the vigil usually in the church?
It's usually in the church. Sometimes it's
at the funeral home.
At the funeral home. It's usually a liturgy of the word, sometimes with a homily, and usually involves some kind of a eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
The vigil is a little bit. The liturgy of the word is pretty set, but the rest of it, can be a little bit flexible. So sometimes people will, like, right before the vigil, show like a slideshow. Sometimes you'll have several people. There's unlike the funeral mass or the funeral service. It's not just one, there's only supposed to be at a funeral mass or service. There's only supposed to be one eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
At a vigil, you can have multiple eulogies. People can get up, tell stories,
sure,
things like that. So anyway, but the deacon can do the preside at the funeral outside of a funeral service that doesn't include a mass, and the funeral vigil, graveside service. To also do baptisms.
Mm-hmm.
And blessings. And so, again, the important thing, and that they emphasize to us, is that the deacon should not just be stuck behind the altar, or should not just be giving homilies. What gives us credibility and the reason that we're up there to proclaim the word and to give the homily is because of the fact that we are serving the poor, or serving the marginalized, serving those in need.
So that
idea of service is really important.
Well, St. Lawrence, does it have other deacons as well?
There's one other deacon there, mm-hmm. So, and anyway, I'm just starting, I have my initial meeting with them this week, so I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to be doing, but I do know that St. Lawrence has a really active ministry to the poor and to the mm-hmm. homeless there. So I imagine I'll be involved in that, and then we'll see where else that goes. But there is one other deacon there.
The deacons,
Deacon Don Galley's there.
Uh-huh. Do the deacons and the pastor butt heads over? I want to give the homily. No, I want to give the homily. It's my favorite gospel.
It just depends, right? It depends on some priests are like, that's fine. You do the homily. Others. Don't. I know that for the last few years at Information, we've been allowed to give a reflection, not a homily, but a reflection at Mass once a month at St. Clair. And we've had three different pastors during that time. And Father Tim basically gave the candidates a whole Sunday. He said, fine, mm-hmm. you get this Sunday. You guys can all preach. You need to cover all the Masses between the three of you. Father Liam took over for a short time in between Father Tim and Father George. And when Father Liam came in, he said, the deacons already preach one weekend and the candidates preach another weekend. That just leaves two weekends a month for the pastor to preach. I'd rather preach more often than mm-hmm. that. So he made us share a weekend. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Father George. He said, well, I think that's a good arrangement. So we shared a weekend. So we all didn't get a preach every month. We had right. to rotate. But because we had three candidates and we had three deacons and we only had five masses. So
you have six masses on a Sunday at St. Lawrence. Do you attend all six?
Just depends.
Yeah.
It just depends. That's something that you work out with. Every deacon signs a service agreement with the parish. I'm talking about here's the ministries of the word I'll be involved in, which the ministry of the word is not just the proclaiming the gospel. It also can be, you know, teaching the faith, RCIA, you know, adult faith formation, being involved mm-hmm. with children's formation as well. The ministry of service or justice, and then also the ministry of the altar. So there's an agreement that's signed between the deacon and the parish about, like, you know, what ministries they're going to be involved in and how many hours they're committing. Because it is a volunteer ministry. That's the right. other thing people need to realize, that deacons are not, most deacons are not paid.
Right.
You know, I'm paid by the church in my job here at the sure. diocese, but that's separate from my work as sure. a deacon. So
how many times in the course of a year does a deacon get called father? Especially after Mass.
Well, just
especially if you've given the
judging
homily.
From my first Mass, a lot.
A lot.
And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's appropriate, you know, sometimes you correct it. Sometimes it's, you know, just a quick thing or whatever. It's, you know, but yeah, it's that happens a lot. Happens a lot to, happens more to seminarians though, because they wear the Roman
sure,
collar
sure.
in public. And so then they get all the time, father, father. Yeah. And they have to go, no, I'm not a father. I'm just training to be one. You know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So that's the thing too, is, you know, it does provide a lot of opportunities to teach people about what a deacon does or doesn't do, because people are, you know, a lot of times confused by that.
Sure. Should be a big sign, I am a deacon.
Married.
Married,
not a priest.
Yeah, but they say,
well, that's the other thing, too, is that
a deacon...
You're
walking out of Mass with your arm around your wife. They're going...
Yeah, so that's the thing too, is that a deacon can be married, a permanent deacon can be married.
Sure, and you most
do,
are.
Yeah, and you do make a commitment to the church that if your wife passes away, that you will not remarry. Mm-hmm. So then you become celibate after that.
And if you were a single man who became a deacon, which is relatively rare, you
would
do
stay,
not get married.
Yeah, you would stay in the celibate state. You make a commitment to celibacy if you're not married when you become ordained.
Yep. That's the trick question on Catholic Trivia Night.
Oh, is it really?
Indeed. Wow. So in your new role here at the – not new role, but a different role, because you've done most of this all along, youth and young adult ministry, a lot coming up here in the next couple of months.
Yeah. We have our biggest event of the year for youth and young adult ministry is called On Fire, the On Fire NorCal Jam. This is the ninth year we've done the event. This year's the event is headlined by Joe Melendrez and Jackie Francois Angel are the two big names. Mm-hmm. But we also have some of our favorite people coming back to this. We have Papa Joe Lucero and his family. Papa Joe Lucero and his family will be there to lead us in music for Mass and praise and worship throughout the day. We also have some good local speakers. Mm-hmm. We've tried to expand the opportunities for local speakers to come and participate. We have a great young adult panel that's going to be facilitated by Cecilia Flores from our mm-hmm. diocese here. And there's a lot of really great, there's some really good music. We have Ska Men coming to do music as well. And so there's speakers. So it's a great day because it's like 9 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock in the evening. We're going to have three or four bishops at Mass in the morning. And then at the end of the day, we do adoration. All day long, we have different speakers. So mm-hmm. we have a speaker, a boys talk and a girls talk for the teens. We have a young adult talk. We have a talk in Spanish for the Hispanic teens. We have a young adult talk. We also are going to have a series of talks for youth ministers throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be announced in the next couple weeks. But it's you pay the money to get into the park, and you get an all-you-can-eat lunch. You get all the speakers all day, all the rides. So, you know, Six Flags, all the things Six Flags offers, the animal shows, the rides, sure, everything else. But it's been a very exciting, you know, successful event.
Yeah, very successful.
It's really nice that it starts with a mass with several bishops. And this year, Bishop Barber from the Diocese of Oakland will be the presider. Yeah. He's an excellent homilist, so we're excited that he'll be giving the homily.
Jesuit bishop,
yeah. He'll be giving the homily in the morning. So it's from 9 to 9. And I wanted to let people know that it's a really great deal this year because if you buy a ticket to if you buy a ticket now for On Fire, you'll get to go to the event on September 15th. You also get a free ticket to the new water park that Six Flags just bought in Concord. So there's a water park there, and so you get a free ticket to the water park and a free ticket to On Fire for the same price. So if you're a youth group out there, you're looking for something to do over the summer, you know, you pay your, I think it's $52 to get a ticket to On Fire. You also get a free ticket to the water park. So it's like two trips in one. So you might want to take a look at that, and you can find it all about that at onfirenorcal.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is SCD Youth Ministry is our Facebook page.
I know there are a lot of dioceses around the country that look at On Fire and go, wow, how can we do that here? How did it start? Did you drive down to Vallejo and say, hey, I have this idea?
Well, it started for me, like, you know, from the whole time that I was I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. We grew up in the Oakland Diocese, and I just always thought, you know, like, I don't know, especially from when I was a teen, like, why don't we have a big, why don't we do a big event? Wouldn't it be great if we did a big event at the, and then when I became a youth minister, there was a lot of talk of that. Like, you know, we should do a really big event. You know, LA does LA Youth Day. Why don't we do something like LA Youth Day, you know? And also I had heard that Life Teen did something at Six Flags called Inspiration. So anyway, I was just, you know, when I became the direct diocesan director, I was thinking, well, you know, wouldn't this be great? And I had called Six Flags to say, hey, you know, what would be the deal? And I met a woman at Six Flags at the time who was really, she was Catholic, and she was like, wow, it's just so great that you want to bring this event here. We'd love to do that, you know. And so I said, you know, well, you know, maybe I could get Matt Maher, because Matt Maher was really popular then in 2010. Right. His song, Love Will Keep Us Together, I think is the song. And Your Grace Is Enough was really popular. So he was becoming a really legitimate Christian music artist at that time and getting really popular. And I thought, well, maybe I could get him. So I called, you know, just cold called, hey, I'm trying to book Matt Maher. And they said they heard about it. And it was this thing at Six Flags. They're like, hey, you know, he's on tour with 10th Avenue North. Why don't we just see if we can get the whole tour? I'm like, okay, you know, really didn't know much about 10th Avenue North. I didn't even know they were that popular. But, you know, so they were a pretty popular Christian band. And so they brought a tour of three artists, including Matt Maher. Mm-hmm. And so they came that first year, and we were expecting about 1,000, and we sold the thing out at 3,500 the first year. And so it was just, you know, kind of, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing, and we kind of lucked out. But, I mean, I really think the Holy Spirit had a lot to do with it. I think there had also been just a need for this kind of an event in the area for many years.
Very good. Well, Kevin, Deacon, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
September 15th, On Fire at Six Flags in Vallejo.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, that God is love and God is just. At the cross you beckon me, you draw me gently to my knees, and I am lost for words, so lost in love. deserved life have I been given through Christ crucified? You called me out of death, you called me into life, and I was under your wrath. Now through the cross I'm reconciled. In love, I